All right, we're going to go ahead and get started. Thank you very much for joining us today. Good morning, everyone. And welcome to the November edition of the Ag Sector Council seminar series entitled The Informal Seed Sector, A Behind the Seeds Look. So I'm going to introduce our introducer, Mark Heisinger, who will give a very brief preview and introduce our speakers. He is Senior Program Manager with the USAID Bureau for Food Security's Markets, Partnerships, and Innovation Office, and is the AOR for the Scaling Seeds and Technology Partnership that we have with AGRA. So, Mark, I'll pass the mic to you.
Thank you, Julie. Well, this is, I hope, going to be an educational event today. We don't really know a lot about the informal seed sector. At USAID, a couple years ago, actually just a year ago, did a study looking at the developing a made seed systems map. And one of the big gaps in that map was what's happening with the informal seed systems. It's not something that we have a lot of information on. I think the number of people looking at this issue is a small number. We are interested in trying to leverage the informal seed system to the extent that we're able to. What that would look like, we're hoping to hear something about today. So without further ado, I'd like to introduce Carl Zamir, who's the key speaker here today. He's a geographer and environmental scientist from Pennsylvania State University, currently a visiting scholar with the David Rockefeller Center in Latin America Studies at Harvard University. He has his PhD from Berkeley, California. Also, as you heard their disembodied voices, we have speakers. One of them is with AVRDC, based in Tanzania, working on vegetable seed issues and informal sector approaches there, as well as the Catalyst Project through the Swiss Contact, Swiss Foundation for Technical Cooperation in Bangladesh. I'm very excited to hear what the Swiss Contact, Swiss Foundation has to say, because we're starting to work with them more closely now in Mozambique. So it'll be exciting to hear what else they're doing in the world. So without further ado, Carl.
Thanks for this opportunity. Here's my talk. Here's me. This is what I would like to talk about. I'll describe a few points associated with what I'm referring to as cyber science, not the CY, but rather a different cyber science applied to informal seed systems, and the informal seed sector is where I'll concentrate my attention with a few takeaways. So what am I referring to by cyber science? And this is really, in a way, the kind of gist of the talk. These are perspectives that I myself, my research group, and also a significant number of other groups and institutions are really building into sciences of human environment interactions and applying those to the informal seed sector and informal seed systems. So a focus on smallholders, small scale farmers. I'll refer to this point at least a couple times. 2 to 2.5 billion small-scale farmers, demographically still a really big part of the global landscape. How can we think about informal seed systems in the context of intensification and sustainable intensification? Obviously, a major global challenge and issue. AID has, I think, some really interesting and important initiatives in this direction. I will definitely give my talk as promised, but I really look forward to interacting and talking with you all about any and all of these points. Biodiversity perspective is pretty central here. Informal seed sectors are associated with the significant use of biodiversity, especially what people refer to as agrobiodiversity, so the biodiversity of cultivated biota, crops and livestock and associated wild relatives. And the idea of enhancing resilience is really central here too. So how to build the capacity to respond to shocks in these systems. So these shocks could be environmental shocks associated with drought or other sorts of stressors, as well as socioeconomic ones, market failure, et cetera. So how can we think about the above points in the context of strengthening resilience in these kinds of systems? And I'll talk about science. I am a scientist, but I have a really broad definition of what that means. It's just evidence-based knowledge systems. So for me, in this context, so I'm really interested actually in kind of the knowledge management challenges and issues and opportunities that I see as really important to the informal seed sector. Smallholders in an informal seed sector, we're basically looking at kind of the multiple nodes or uses of local seed or the informal seed sector, not necessarily local. Some of these informal seed sectors are scaled at national and even international levels. We're looking at interactions, too, between informal and formal seed sector. There is not there's not a firewall between these kinds of systems, so it's actually really interesting to think about varieties that do move between these, and I could go into that, but just to put it out there as an idea. In the upper right, what we're looking at is a study of 11 countries where we are actually, that Mark's point was really well taken. You know, there's not much information out there. We are starting to come up with some really interesting country-level studies. This is a mass of data, 11 countries, looking at an index of informal seed systems as a function of seed size. And the takeaway on this is just the concentration of higher level, higher reliance on informal seed in the smaller scale farms. So this really is a smallholder issue, and we can draw different regression lines for different world regions and different crops and minor crops, major crops, etc. But all of those lines show a lot of concentration of informal seed sector reliance among smallholder populations. So that's just a really strong link or linkage in these systems that's a big part of what we're doing and what we're working on. The intensification piece, the I in the cyber that I'm referring to, is really important. Conventional wisdom is that as agriculture intensifies, you have a drop off of biodiversity. That certainly is the general rule of thumb, and yet there really are different pathways. I think that's the bottom line, and we're, you know, in a sense, the goal is to stay on one of these upper curves where you can incorporate more biodiversity into intensification. And on the right side of this slide is just an example of where, in an extended case study, the axes are different. Don't try to wrap your mind around that graph in the upper right. But the bottom line is that there's a lot of biodiversity incorporated into an intensification trajectory in a Bolivian case study that we did between 2000 and 2010, high levels of biodiversity, and it totally depended on the informal seed sector supplying seed that farmers were able to put into kind of new fields, smaller fields, differently sequenced fields, fields with different growing seasons. All those kind of new opportunities, innovations that were going on in order to kind of change things as part of intensification depended on seed inputs from the informal seed sector. So for me, I'm not saying that this is like an ironclad rule, but there are opportunities here to connect the informal seed sector to, kind of type two trajectories, try to stay on the upper part of that curve, keep agrobiodiversity in these systems while intensification occurs. That depends on informal seed. So when in my research, we're really trying to connect the intensification issue and the informal seed issue. Biodiversity in these systems can be very high. Often it's more on the moderate level. But basically, the way I like to think of it, if you go back to the diagram of the informal seed sector, there are a lot of nodes. There are a lot of different places where farmers are using or obtaining seed. Each of those nodes represents an opportunity for different variation to kind of pop up in the system. So these do tend to be higher diversity seed systems. There's nothing kind of inherent about that. There's no intrinsic property. But if you think about it's all about networks in a way. If you think about an informal seed system as having many nodes in the network, each of those nodes represents an opportunity for variation to kind of build up in the system. So these do tend to be higher agrobiodiversity systems. And again, tons of details there. But here we're back up to the ER, the enhancing resilience piece of these systems. And really, I think the importance of informal seed here is that it provides farmers the capacity to respond in low, medium, high intensity systems. This is the way kind of resilience thinking works. We're aiming to have either resilient or even like hyper-resilient, so-called opportunistic responses, avoid collapses. But seeds provide, the informal seed sector really does provide a capacity to respond to shocks. Where that's happening globally right now is often in terms of diversity of seeds providing different maturation periods or growing seasons. So if there are droughts, if, as in Mexico, Central and South America, East Africa, where I'm working, crops are moving typically upslope in response to climate changes. That depends on informal seed systems providing different maturation periods in the seed lots that farmers can access. For me, that's a good example of resilience, right, in these systems. They're responding to shocks that are occurring, and they're accessing seeds that are short maturation, short cycle kinds of seeds. So there are lots of different examples of that, but that's just one that I can toss out there. So we went through the cyber piece, smallholders, intensification, biodiversity, enhancing resilience. I probably have a few minutes left, and so I will go to some applications, talk about seed system structure and function, social participation and crowdsourcing approach that we're developing, and what I call markets and mixed approaches. I have no idea if I'll get to all of these, but however far I get, you know that this is kind of looming in the background. So feel free to, I'd welcome the chance to talk about this. In terms of seed system structure and function in informal seeds, like I was saying, it is about the networks, and these are networks that exist, that these are individual communities, and what this map shows is a lot of seed that's being exchanged within communities, but also between communities. So when we think about the structure, one of the things we think about is the spatial structure, and this is really important because it's often the flow of seeds from outside of communities that replenishes in the case of drought or some other kind of shock. So resilience requires these multiple levels. And the way seeds move in these systems, it's important for resilience, but it's very basic to like the environmental properties of the systems. So if we think about adaptive capacity environmentally, I don't want to go into a big ecology tangent, but basically adaptive capacity in seeds depends on where they're grown. They kind of co-evolve with those environments. And where they're grown depends on these, where they move through the networks. So in a sense, those networks are driving the type of adaptive capacity in these seeds. So we need to see the seed networks as very related to the adaptive capacity of different varieties and different species. And this is just an ecological test of that. That's part of what I work on and several other groups and institutions. So what's the strategy? What's a take-home that we can get out of this? I think the take-home here is the importance of identifying and connecting the networks across scale. So it's not just about networks, it's about networks of networks. So it's about how the networks connect. And informal seed sector knowledge right now has a huge opportunity because most of what we've worked on is community and village level systems. And that's extremely important. There's lots of sort of nice low-hanging fruit kinds of opportunities. But what we really need to do in terms of knowledge systems and on-the-ground programs and projects is connect those village and community systems to the landscape and region scale seed systems, which is it's at those higher levels where the seed's kind of coming from. It moves, in a sense, it moves both up and down the ladder. So when this village has a drought event, for example, they replenish as a result of informal networks from the landscape. If there's a landscape scale event, a market failure or drought or whatever, it could replenish through the region level. So we really need to think about how can we connect the networks. And we have an idea, really, for a project that we call the Bridging the Gaps Project. This would be to work with community groups, to work with NGOs and government agencies. A lot of this is work that I do with CG centers. In this case, it's with SIP and with SIOT, SIOT in Colombia, but also in Vietnam. And we really want to see that we can kind of build capacity in connecting across these gaps, which I think is a really nice opportunity right now. In my lab, we do a lot of geographic information systems, remote sensing. Some of that technological capacity turns out to be really well suited, but also just a lot of on-the-ground partnerships with all kinds of groups and institutions are really integral to these projects too. Okay, second application is to this idea of social participation and crowdsourcing. This is another CG collaboration that I have with Bioversity International. And the idea is to share information, build social inclusivity through social participation and crowdsourcing approaches. I'll give the example of the India part of this project. We also have plans for Ethiopia and for Central America. In the India part of this project, it's work on wheat and rice. In the case of the crowdsourcing, it's really information sharing at this point. There are 15,000 farmers who are sharing information about wheat varieties. And I could go into like vast details about this, but I think what I want to emphasize is that it's an amazingly effective way of kind of upscaling information. In a way, it goes right back to Mark's point, too, about kind of an information-poor setting. How do we generate information in these contexts? And crowdsourcing is really interesting in this regard. Technologically, it's really interesting. We certainly have kind of an interest in online and in cell phone accessible kinds of technologies for this information. And for me, the strategy point, the takeaway that I'd like to emphasize as part of this that my group's working on a lot, which is one of the really interesting parts about crowdsourcing, which is very much kind of like a bottom ground up process, very local, but it generates masses and masses and masses of information that are no longer local. So this is a really interesting like information management issue. So lots of different parts of that information management, but the strategy that we're working on is visualization tools. So this is a lot of work that we do in my geosynthesis lab and other groups is how can we share this information in visual forms. So these are actually variety specific maps. So we're looking at 20 different varieties and their performance spatially and geographically across these areas in India, either in at higher level of being of ranking or lower level. Basically, farmers rank varieties relatively as top, middle, bottom. Each farmer works with three varieties, and then we amass and process that information. This is just really simple kind of visualization and statistics. There are actually some really interesting statistical approaches that can drive the mapping. So that's actually another thing we're working on, is how do you visualize kind of the statistically generated information, but then put that back in the hands of farmers. So citizen science is this citizen science and crowdsourcing is so interesting that it starts with simple information, it becomes complex information, and then you want to sort of be able to make it accessible again. So I think it's really interesting opportunities. Markets and mixed approaches, these informal seed systems have a huge market component. It's often mixed with non-market sort of uses. So a familiar dividing of harvest between sale and marketing and seed and consumption. And here are some statistics based on extensive surveys and what it means in terms of varieties on the land. But the bottom line for me on something like this is that these informal seed systems are extremely mixed. We tend to dichotomize, oh, is it for the market or not for the market? There is so much fluidity, and I think that there are interesting opportunities there too. So strategy-wise, for the example I'll give is just this is an example of maize. I tend to work with staple crops. You've seen the potatoes. I work with maize. I work with wheat. I've worked with rice. This is just looking at market sales, but also local seed exchange, and using remote sensing and geographic information systems, we're looking at a smallholder landscape where the fields cluster. So farmers, to coordinate water use and other reasons, they tend to grow maize fields next to each other, and then they share seed. And so that's a kind of what we call a spatial externality, but a positive spatial externality. And how can we kind of use that to potentially generate a ripple or a cascading effect where maybe a small investment could produce a large positive change across a landscape? So that's the idea of that. Perfect timing. I think I am on takeaways. Oops. Just go to takeaways. I think these are a few of the main takeaways that I want to end with, is that idea of identifying and connecting networks across scales. I really feel like the knowledge in informal seed sectors, projects and activities have evolved to where we really need to move up from community and village-based systems and think about landscape and regional levels and seed moving up and down those ladders. How can we get that knowledge? How do we manage that knowledge? It won't be the same as the village and community-based kinds of partnerships that are extremely local, et cetera. There's a role for expert knowledge kind of combined with that extremely sort of locally based knowledge. I emphasized the crowdsourcing and participatory approaches and that opportunities there, which I think are really interesting for generating knowledge and the importance of visualizing it. And just in general, I don't know, the extent to which we have a familiar idea of thinking about seeds and breeding as the G cross E model of genotype and environment. Well, when I think of seeds, I think of seeds interacting with the environment and then with the social and economic context of farmers and farming communities. So I think kind of having that three-piece framework it underlies everything I said. All those elements of seed system, environment, and farmer, socioeconomic and cultural. Those are all kind of behind the scenes. I think that was in the title here. Those were all like behind the scenes here. I really need to be sure to acknowledge a lot of collaborators in these projects. All my work is collaborative. I have and I do appreciate opportunities of collaborating with USAID. I also have worked with the National Science Foundation. I have a lab called the Geosynthesis Lab, and lots of peasant, indigenous, smallholder communities and collaborators, several of the CG systems, international, national universities, and these citizen science and crowdsourcing groups have become an important part of this collaboration mix for me as well. So thank you for this opportunity.
I'm sure there will be some questions for you during our Q&A period at the end. But for now, we are going to shift over to Victor from AVRDC, the World Vegetable Center. So let's make sure that we can hear you, Victor.
Yeah, I'm online.
Yes. All right, so we'll bring up your volume in here a little bit, but you sound good to me. So please go ahead.
Okay, so I will essentially be focusing more on the vegetable seed systems, specifically on informatics systems, and I'll zoom in mostly given my experiences from what that has been done in Tanzania and some other parts of Eastern and Southern Africa. So, as you can see, my name is Victor Farsefa, and I work as a socioeconomist with AVRDC in Tanzania. I'll just give a brief overview of what informal seed systems are. I think Carl already did give a comprehensive overview of that. But ideally, this is anything that can be from reading from an individual or a kind of group system. So for individuals, we can have the smallholder farmers exchanging seeds or through barter, or it can be through a gift, or sometimes even through labor exchange, or even for certain social obligations where seed becomes a form of exchange. It could also be through a means by which a group of farmers, and this can either be a formal group or an informal group, coming together to produce seeds that are specifically adapted to their agroecological systems and of particular preferences for consumption. Now, this is by far the most important source of seed for most farmers within sub-Saharan Africa in general. Now, we also have the recognized community seed production systems, and these normally could be either project-based, based on interventions where funding is coming from different donors, and also through informal relationships between traders and farmers, where sometimes traders will pre-finance production of seeds through the option of getting the first buy at harvest period. Now, in most parts of sub-Saharan Africa, this type of informal seed system, which we will normally call farmer-led seed enterprises, account for between 75% to 80%. Of the total seeds that are used for production. So you see that is quite very, very significant. The formal sector, which is the private seed companies, account for quite a very small proportion of this, and I think this is well documented already. Now the question is why farmer-led seed enterprises? And the reason is not far-fetched. As you recall, I recall particularly in most parts of sub-Saharan Africa, in the 70s and 80s, there was a lot of state-owned enterprises, and most of the seed production and supply systems were managed by the public sector through a lot of structural adjustment programs. There was a led to the privatization of most of these, most likely in, probably also in the 90s. Of course, around that same time, too, there were a lot of emergency seed aid. But as you realize, the fact that the privatization was necessary to make the process much more efficient. Now, unlike the public sector, most of the private sector try to emphasize more on profit maximization, which is really quite clear. and you focus on high value cash crops, and of course try to concentrate on low volume, just to segment the market to ensure that you get the right demand. Due to the exclusivity or the need to have intellectual property rights and make sure that the business is not patronized by other competitors, they try to focus more on hybrid seeds. But of course, this varies from one origin to the other. And the main challenge, even as of now, is that there's a lot of seed adulteration. Now, even for the private seed companies, we have people taking their logos and also printing seeds, putting in seeds that are not even certified and also trying to sell. Now, so this is a major challenge even with the current private sector. Now, what is the requirement of small farmers or smallholders? We normally want flexibility and, of course, diversity in terms of the variety and then the requirement of or what the expectations to get from such seeds. So with the diverse agroecology and the need for more specific seeds that meet their preferences, there's a need for them to look beyond both the private sector and even some of the countries which still have a vibrant public sector. Now, the typical characteristics of these farmer-led seed enterprises are that, of course, you want to conserve genetic resources. The farmers try to do that, and of course, there have been a lot of discussion on farmer rights. In this particular case, farmers get involved in participatory crop improvement, and you realize that they get involved and try to contribute rather than having it more as a kind of top-down approach. And then, of course, in most cases, some private sectors even contract more of these farmers or farmer groups to produce seed for them. But, of course, this is much more on from the farmer-led side than from the seed companies. And, of course, the seeds that are produced are of local supply and meet the specific demands of the agroclimate and also the taste and preferences of the farm. So the key characteristics, of course, you realize that trees at the local level, and the most of them are a wide range of exchange. I think Carl also mentioned about that people try to exchange seeds of various forms. And then, of course, the critical thing here is it directly addresses the immediate needs of the farmer in terms of the timing of planting, which is for the season. The special, this is most of the private seed companies are unable to reach certain communities from their main operating cities where they produce the seeds. And then, of course, things like information gaps and the value of the seeds are best interpreted by the farmers in this context. Now, certification is a key issue because the fact is that in most of these, seeds are not actually certified, and certification is just based on mutual trust or what we call social certification. So now, critically, what we realize is that most of these are technically equipped. We have a market driven because in most cases it's demand driven. And then, of course, the seed business is quite autonomous. The farmers may have their own rights to go about their issues, and of course, it is much more decentralized. So I now want to focus on one particular type of seed system here in Tanzania called the quality declared seed, and I think probably most of you are aware of this. This was introduced by the SO in 2004, and typical examples were this kind of practice in Tanzania and Madagascar, and this is the kind of seed that are produced within a specific agroecological zone, such that you don't have testing done in all the agroecological zones of the country, but probably one particular area, maybe the semi-arid region. And then seeds that are produced are supposed to be also certified with a certification body. But it just happens that also with that restriction, you are ideally supposed to sell the seeds within that agroecological zone. So that's kind of a limitation. And the other thing is that since it is based on the farmer-led, in most cases, they have to use manual seed extraction procedures, and this can be quite laborious. Now, the challenge here is that you realize that I try to compare where the quality declared seed with a seed contract system that was based on an Irish aid and Asarika-funded project in Tanzania. And this is a collaboration, again, within researchers, extensionists, and private sector, where we try to compare a private seat contract model with a quality declared seat. Now, I realize that we did selection, supportive sampling, we did a baseline study, we built the capacity of the farmers to be able to produce the seeds, and then, of course, we organized training of trainers workshops. We took monitoring visits, and then we tried to compare the two farming seed enterprises based on representative farm and also later on detailed household surveys. Now, the interesting thing is that we found that farmers get more money from producing seed than producing vegetables themselves. You know? Actually, the benefit cost ratio was about 2.27 for the contract seed model, but interestingly, very high for the quality declared seed simply because they use much more low input systems compared to the private seed company model. Now, the revenues from the sale of seed was also increased by 2.3 times if farmers are able to access certified seeds. Now, difficulties encountered by some farmers in accessing viable markets, as I said, trying to access markets beyond that agroecological zone can sometimes be difficult, and the fact that the seed is not much differentiated than an ordinary standard seed sold in the market. So branding was critical to ensure success. Now, the other thing is that we also require public-private partnerships to be able to ensure the success of these, particularly if you want to look into the private sector model. Then, of course, because of the regulatory requirements, and a niggling environment is required for that, particularly if they are to be sustainable. And then, of course, the issue of capacity building and asset collaborative network between the extension system and other research systems is quite critical for this. Now, I'll just highlight a little bit on another seed model, which is integrated seed sector development, funded by the Dutch government and then Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. We realized that in this particular instance, we tried to link the formal and informal system quite more accurately. And this is quite interesting to bridge that gap between the formal and the informal seed sector. Now, there's also the Village Growth Seed Enterprise, and this is not directly a donor-funded project, but basically a kind of facilitation by ICADA, where people come together in a village and try to produce seeds. And then based on that, we come together and that ICADA just tries to do a kind of facilitation for ensure that the seeds can be produced and farmers can make significant profits. Now, already there are a lot of big voices that are trying to bridge this system between the formal and informal sector. We have Africa Seed Program, AGRA is doing quite a lot. We have the West African Seed Alliance and several others. And in, by way of conclusion, I just highlight a few things and realize that most of these informal or seed sector, particularly the community ones, are donor funded, and of course it's encourages dependency. The way to go about this is try to institutionalize this by encouraging private sector investment where possible. And then of course we need to consider all the technical issues related to most of these seed systems. To make them also quite sustainable. And then, of course, there's a need to link these informal seed systems to the formal seed sector to get foundation seed. The research aspect, the capacity building component is quite critical. Now, there's also no one-size-fits-all for farmer-led seed enterprises or the informal seed sector. And, of course, it depends on the specific circumstances that will depict what really has to do and what will work. And, of course, critical is that it's demand-driven. So that is certainly where I will want to end my talk. And thanks very much for your attention, and I look forward to answering questions later in the seminar. Thank you.
Wonderful. Thank you, Victor. And thank you for staying within time as requested. And I'd just like to let our in-person participants know that these slides will be available on agrilinks.org this afternoon. There was a lot of rich information in these slides. And so if you go to agrilinks.org, you should be able to access them under events on the event page for this seminar. And we'll also be sending out a link to all of you who attended today with the recording of this event, the slides, and any other associated resources. So you can review all of those after the fact. All right, so next up, our last presentation, we have Mehdi and Tashfiq from Swiss Contract, the Catalyst Project, joining us from Bangladesh. So please go ahead. Yes, we can hear you.
Hello, everyone. I'm extremely delighted to be one of the presenters of this seminar today. I will present a story that changed life of thousands of poor vegetable farmers in Bangladesh.
Right. And
I will be presenting.
This is just a suggestion. Oh, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. Just a suggestion to speak somewhat slowly to make sure that we can hear it easily in the room here.
I will be presenting, and Tashfiq Al-Tasan will be more active in the question and answer session. Okay, this is our presentation agenda. First of all, we'll talk a little about our project and approach, and then we'll go to the intervention area, and then finally we'll talk about the way forward and key takeaways from this presentation. Okay, at first I would like to introduce my project to you. Catalyst is a market development project that aims to contribute to increasing the income of poor men and women in rural areas. It does by facilitating changes in services, input, and products market, increasing the competitiveness of farmers and small enterprises. Our phase three is co-funded by SDC, DFID, and Danida. During phase two, Catalyst has benefited 2.4 million farmers, and in phase three, it plans to benefit 1.4 million farmers and aims to increase the income of $250 million. So these are the sectors we currently work. We have three core sectors, namely vegetable, farm fish, and maize. And we have cross sectors, women, economic empowerment, and local activism network and information channels. Now, I would go through how Catalyst works. A farmer is poor. It's not a problem for us. Rather, this is a symptom. So we analyze why and how a farmer is poor, and then why does not the market system work to solve the problem. Eventually, what you get as answer is the underlying causes of why farmer is poor. This guides us to develop the intervention that changes the market system. As a result, poor gets access to markets, inputs, services, etc., which in turn increases income and thereby reduces poverty. So here you can see the context of the vegetable seed market in Bangladesh. Large farmers have access to quality seed. Around 20 to 25% of the farmers use quality seeds and they get higher yield. But on the other hand, the poor farmers do not use quality seeds and they are not getting higher yield. So as you can see from here that 70% of seeds are being supplied by the informal sectors, which are basically locally produced by the local farmers and others. So why this is happening? Large farmers have access to quality seeds. They have big lands and money to buy quality seeds. But on the other hand, small and homestead farmers, they rarely use quality seeds due to many reasons. Few reasons include that asymmetric information and hence can't identify the quality seed. They are not aware about the benefit of using quality seed. Even if they're aware, they do not need the quantity available in the regular packets of quality seed. So they use substandard seed saved from the previous service or buying inferior quality seed, so that they do not get higher yield. So from this, we found the intervention area, which is basically availability of quality vegetable seeds catering to the needs of poor, small, and homestead farmers. Before going to our main intervention, I would like to go back to another intervention which was done previously by Catalyst. In 2008, Catalyst started working with a seed company by including mobile seed vendors, MSVs, in the company's distribution channel. Mobile seed vendors are basically seed sellers who visit different markets and sell seeds. Up to that point, MSBs had been selling only inferior quality non-packet seeds to poor farmers. Within 2 years, this initial intervention had been widely adopted by other companies and showed there was a high market demand for quality vegetable seeds among poor farmers. It was also observed from this intervention that small farmers were buying seeds sold by the MSBs from open packets. Basically, what MSBs were actually doing, they were cutting the large packets and selling in small quantity as the need of the poor farmers were for small quantity seeds. This market scenario reinforced the idea of smaller packets of seeds. So in March 2011, Catalyst partnered with two leading private seed companies to introduce mini packets of quality vegetable seeds catering to the needs of smallholder farmers. The idea was very simple. They could sell more seeds, probably to an untapped section of the farmers, if they had appropriately sized and priced products. And it will also reduce the opportunities for adulteration by distributors, retailers, and vendors. And it was basically identified as a major interest of the seed company. So mini packs for 35 varieties, which would cover around 0.03 acres to 0.04 acres, were introduced in the market. And also, the price of the mini packets were 12 cents for OP varieties and to 25 cents for hybrid varieties, whereas the regular packets were priced at $1 to $2 US dollars. So basically, this is our resultation of how intervention has evolved. Initially, we facilitated two seed companies to assess market, develop strategic plan, and packaging for promoting vegetable seeds in mini packs. Then the company started promoting and distributing quality vegetable seeds to farmers through networks of knowledgeable mobile seed vendors. Then it happened that channel members were making quality seed available to the farmers through mini packets, and the smallholder farmers had access, increased access and usage of quality seeds in the farm. So initially the intervention was initially piloted in 3 districts. One company expanded it in 55 districts within a year. How did that happen? Well, in first region, targets were to sell 100,000 mini packets, but they overshot and sold 558,000 mini packets. In the following year, Lal Peer, one of our partners, alone sold 1.3 million mini packs. So though the idea seems very simple, but why it wasn't that easy to implement? Because companies focus on large farmers as ROI is higher. And also, it was not a guaranteed business case for them. So companies were reluctant to invest. In Bangladesh, most companies perceived first mover advantage as short-lived. So they were not that interested to invest in this mini packet idea. But when you showed them the mini pack, when you showed them the market scenario with what happened in the mobile seed vendors interventions, and they were on board to implement. So when engaging a private sector partner, what we look for is, like, first of all, their incentives, which include profit, their increasing market share, and also they will have a good reputation in the business as they are catering to small farmers. Another point is very important, which is scalability, and we ask the questions, are the companies capable enough to do it on their own when we will no longer be able to support? And also we ask the questions, are the financials strong enough? Another key element is the quality of inputs or services they provide, because we see their market reputation, product quality, and then we engage them as a partner. So here is the impact I will talk about in a briefly. The number of cumulative beneficiary households from mini packets user grew from 236,000 to 339,000 and subsequently to 458,000 in subsequent seasons 2012. And in repeat buying rose from 15% to 41%, and till December 2013, as you can see, our total number of beneficiaries was 579,000. And an average beneficiary used the seed on an average of 0.03 to 0.05 acres of land, and around 80% of the beneficiaries lived below the $205 a day poverty, $2.5 a day poverty line. At least 90% of the beneficiaries also used the produce grown from mini packets to feed their families. 40% of farmers used the mini packets in home gardens, and there were over 100,000 female beneficiaries. The mini packets have also been successful in having demonstration effect on peer farmers, be it small, medium, marginal, homestead, or even large farmers. Mini packets also enabled medium or large farmers to experiment with new crops. Farmers are also adopted to use better quality seeds. And we found that homestead farmers are having access to quality seeds because of the appropriate size product. And most of the homestead farmers were women, so it has a strong gender inclusion. It was also observed that optimal utility from the packets has sometimes been hindered due to, you know, limited knowledge of poor farmers and home gardeners on proper cultivation techniques for HYB or hybrid seeds. A rather interesting learning was a stronger distribution channel with appropriate product has a strong impact on access rather than extensive demonstration and access. The company's own analysis showed that growth of its mini pack sale also contributed to the growth of their normal packs, which has grown by 35% since the introduction of mini packets. And our impact on income was we had income increase for $25 million USD, and we found that each farmers were benefiting income for $34 per year. So what we are doing now, after learning from this intervention, we are doing few other things. We are partnering other companies to scale up in more remote areas, and so that the quality seeds are available in remote areas. And we are also providing cultivation related information through seed packaging, so that the farmers become aware of the cultivation knowledge and make it a proper vegetable cultivation. And key takeaways from this presentation will be, the idea was very simple. So as you can see, a very simple business idea can have big impact on poor lives. And we should not focus on complex things only. Rather, the simple ideas can change the lives of thousands of poor farmers. Also, the timing of the intervention is very critical. Sometimes to implement an intervention, it is necessary to take pre-intervention measures. Another very important takeaway is quality product does its own promotion, and if the private sector companies have quality products, they can effectively reach poor farmers for a sustainable development initiative. So this was all from our side. Thank you, everyone. And to know more about our project, please visit our website, as it is mentioned, at catalyst.com.bd. And if you have any questions, feel free to ask us. Thank you. I do.